ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As access to sophisticated generative AI proliferates, governments, businesses, and educational institutions are all being challenged with huge questions. Dr. Rooman Chowdhury is one of the world's leading experts on the responsible use of artificial intelligence. Joined me a short time ago.
Thank you so much for having me.
What does responsible and safe use of generative artificial intelligence actually look like?
That's a great question. I know there's a lot of speculation and a lot of theory, but my work has actually for the last 7 years been grounded in building solutions. So what that looked like in the era of narrow AI or pre-generative AI was creating model oversight methods. In fact, my group at Accenture built the first at-scale bias detection and mitigation tool called the Fairness Tool. Now, with generative AI, things are a little bit different. We don't follow the traditional statistical models that usually were underpinning traditional machine learning solutions. So we're creating ways of doing what I call structured public feedback, ways in which we engage broader members of the population to be part of identifying the values these systems should hold, and also being part of building these value-driving systems as well. We're seeing work being driven by the biggest generative AI companies like Anthropic and OpenAI to try to understand value systems so they can embed them at scale in their models.
And when you look at that sort of research that's being done, those indicators, how is AI going? What are the dangers? Is it worrying or you know, are we on top of things?
Well, I think the picture is a little bit mixed right now. We are in the early days of generative AI, and I know there's a lot of noise in the market, but really if we weed down to what is practically and pragmatically being used, it's actually not a lot. I think that companies and individuals are rightfully confused and maybe even sometimes a little uncertain about what the impact of these models will be. That's why there's so much focus on things like red teaming, model evaluations, and structured public feedback, as I mentioned. So I think the jury's out.
But when you hear, you know, experts, leaders in this field, like Sam Altman, warning of the dangers, what are we to take from that?
I think it's very curious that the people who are already making billions of dollars, who stand to gain billions more, are also simultaneously telling the story that we should be concerned. If we indeed should be as concerned as maybe some of these people make it seem, then why are they still building the technology? Wouldn't the logical answer be to not build it? All that is to say, I think that what they are talking about is correct. I think that there is what has been called the fourth industrial revolution, an AI revolution happening. I think that it will impact jobs, but I don't think there's reason to be frightened. In fact, my nonprofit, Humane Intelligence, is built around engaging and educating people in hands-on and meaningful ways. This is just a technology. We had the internet, we had email, we've had many technological disruptions before. It's never been framed as something to be frightened of. And in fact, being scared of it leads to people not engaging with it. I think people should engage with it. I think it is something that we all can engage with and benefit from in a meaningful way.
Do you think, though, the industry knows what they've created in these tools and I guess more particularly how people will use them? Because ultimately it does come down to human behavior and how they are using these very, very powerful tools.
You're absolutely spot on. And I appreciate your framing that it's the people who use the technology, not a technology running itself. So, you know, I think that like any emerging technology, and again, we've had emerging technology before, there are smart ways to address how it is put out into the world in a responsible manner. So people make the parallel with nuclear technologies as another example of what's called a dual use technology. So technology that could simultaneously be built for good and for evil. So nuclear technologies, we can use it to make clean energy. It can also be used to make a bomb. That is further and I think more extreme than AI systems. But similarly, if we think about building these language models, I have done research that demonstrates that language models can be used to create at-scale mis- and disinformation campaigns, to create at-scale harassment campaigns. These are things we should worry about, in particular, in a year in which there are over 2 billion people voting in elections. However, you also can't deny the benefit this technology is bringing us. We're seeing advances in medicine and science and weather prediction and things that will actually net improve our lives.
So are there regulatory steps that you've seen that are a net benefit, that are actually, you know, reining in some of those problems you mentioned, misinformation, disinformation, without, you know, eating, eroding into the benefits of AI?
It's certainly a work in progress. I have seen some really promising signs. Earlier this year, myself and some other folks were at a giant security conference in Munich. Out of that conference came an accord that was signed by basically all of the major AI and tech companies to agree to create solutions to addressing election mis and disinformation. In addition, we've seen unanimous agreement in the United Nations to start developing guidelines to ensure that AI systems are being built with human flourishing and human rights in mind. So these are all incredibly promising. So, and we're also seeing harder regulation like the EU AI Act, which just was signed and will be in effect in about 2 years. But in the meantime, regulation is going to be passing. We've seen the executive order in the United States signed by President Biden, which set up the US AI Safety Institute. In addition, we've seen safety institutes popping up in Japan, in the UK as well. And actually in Australia, there's a lot of conversation around creating better guardrails for AI systems.
When you look at hacking, for example, and the involvement of malware and other problematic tech issues coming, you know, from countries like Russia, North Korea, China to a point, and others, is there any point in putting together guidelines on AI when there's little sign that some of these countries aren't willing to play ball with the global community on other areas of tech?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, we've been here before. We were here with genetic research and bioengineering. If you remember at the turn of the century, we had started to create, as a global scientific community, geneticists had created ways to start doing cloning. And there was actually an agreement to ensure that scientists were not pursuing human and embryo cloning. And that agreement has actually worked. Now, of course, there are folks, and you have mentioned China, there are some, I believe, a Chinese scholar or researcher who insists on developing human embryo genetic cloning, but by and large, the community actually does a good job of enforcing itself. Now, translating that to AI is a little bit harder, because frankly, it is quite hard to get the expertise and the materials to create at-scale cloning, but anybody can download code off the internet and start creating malicious AI models. That being said, I do think that AI and the promise of AI has always been built on the community at large. So I wouldn't rush too quickly to shut down access, because the balance, the opposite of having a free and open and maybe slightly more chaotic marketplace is to create one that only has a handful of companies in a very strong oligopoly, with this oligopoly literally only located in Silicon Valley and nowhere else. That being said, I am seeing a lot of positive movement from scholars and, you know, AI developers all over the world, including in China. So most recently, there have been increased bilateral conversations between US and China. Maybe the answer here is politicians don't solve it, the researchers do. I'm very heartened by how the research community tends to act science first and maybe country affiliation afterwards. Not to say that scientists are perfect, but I do think that scientists are, in this case, able to break down borders and talk about issues of common concern in a way that will lead to this technology being built a lot more positively.
And who should be held accountable if those guardrails are breached?
Well, first, the companies. These companies have billions of dollars at their disposal. I think there is often a misperception that all of the malicious use will come from open source communities or, you know, free and available online code. That's not necessarily the case. So, and this is the spirit of laws like the EU AI Act. The companies are ultimately responsible. And as you mentioned earlier, it's human actors that create this technology. So when I talk about creating scale mis and disinformation campaigns, you'll notice I call it a campaign and not just content, right? So the ability to create fake content has existed since the dawn of time, right? We have the term yellow journalism that came out of the 1940s and 1950s. This did not need artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, however, makes it easier to make the content, But this content still needs to be hosted somewhere. It needs to be distributed by somebody. And algorithms built by for-profit companies would have to show it to you in order for you to take action. So even if there is something being built by a non-corporate actor, there are still companies engaged in the distribution of this technology that should be held accountable.
Yeah, very interesting stuff, Dr. Ruman Chowdhury. Thanks for that.
Thank you so much for your time.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.